Oshkosh potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about some new films, She Dies Tomorrow, The Secret, Dare to Dream, Summerland, and Die Hard. I'll also be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, A Fat Guy 5, and the Home Cinema Roundup, featuring a spotlight on 13 ghosts. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@thatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
This is a little bit of a personal thing. It's actually about news about myself. My father passed away last week. So I've been dealing with that over the last week. You may have seen me disappear a little bit on social media. If you follow me on social media, or if you hear me weekly on the radio, I took a week off doing some of my call-ins. My father, he actually had a stroke 2.5 years ago, and it literally changed my life because I became a full-time caregiver to him. He spent some time in inpatient rehab, and then he had outpatient rehab where he was at home. He lost his ability to move. He lost his ability to walk. He lost his desire to eat. And there are a lot of things that we were dealing with. It's a pragmatic struggles with any sort of a situation with a stroke. And we spent 2.5 years working with him. I take him to therapy several times a week. We eventually got him eating again, and he never lost his ability to function cognitively, but there were certain things that were impacted, and it was a struggle for many, many months, and ups and downs. And if you've ever had to deal with an ailing loved one, it can be a real challenge, but it's also very rewarding because it does bring you closer. He got to the point where he was ready to go. He was ready to pass on, and he was tired. He was 82. So through his wishes, we let it kind of take its course, and he went to hospice and eventually passed. So that's something that has been weighing on me for the last 2.5 years. And that's one of the reasons I've been so vigilant about stopping the spread of coronavirus when I can with my voice out there and talking to people. Because, I mean, talk an 82-year-old stroke victim, if he got that, he was gone. And I wanted him to go out on his own terms, which thank God he did. He was able to go out at home surrounded by his loved ones. And that's one of the reasons I've been pounding the desk saying, wear a mask, stop the spread. I have real skin in the game. I had real skin in the game with him. I still have real skin in the game. My mom's 75. She's got some pre-existing conditions. I don't want her to get sick. My wife's a teacher. She's going back to school. My kids are going back to school. I'm doing what I can to keep my family safe. I just wanted to bring the listeners in on what's been going on in my personal life, which has been a big struggle for me over the past 2.5 years. So thank you for your support and listening and reaching out for those of you who know me personally. I truly appreciate it. Now, I am going to talk a little bit more about my father in a later segment. We're going to do a Fat Guy 5. I kind of want to just give the audience a snapshot of the bizarre tastes that my father had with movies. So there's going to be a Fat Guy 5 about him in a later segment. But I want to hit a couple news stories first, a little less tender for me. The big news this past week is that Tenet has finally figured out what it's going to do. It is going to release overseas first because the virus containment is better there. And that's going to open internationally at the end of August. And then over Labor Day, they're going to start doing it in a limited theatrical. They're basically going to say whatever theaters can handle, Tenet, they're going to open. And this will be after, I think, Unhinged comes out on like the 21st. And then Tenet is going internationally the next week. And then the following week, it's going to be opening in the U.S. So that's when you're going to have to check your local listings and see what theaters are going to allow it to play, which, of course, pushes AMC and Regal and Cinemark to open their theaters, and we'll see what happens then. So who knows? But that's kind of what's driving that force. At the same time, AMC and Universal have come to an agreement. If you recall back when Trolls came out earlier this year, when it went straight to VOD, the theaters were really cheesed off because they're like, we want to have a theatrical window for movies. We don't want stuff to just go straight to VOD because that skips theaters entirely and theaters are really hurting right now. So AMC Theaters and Universal kind of got together and said, okay, here's what we're going to deal with. And it blew my mind when this information came out. They agreed to less than a 3-week theatrical window. It's something like 18 days. They're basically agreeing to say, if we're going to release a movie, we're going to give you a shot. You can have it for 2.5 weeks, which is insanely narrow. It used to be they wanted 6 months between theatrical and any sort of video options. And then it got moved down to like 90 days, which is sort of the standard. And now we're down to what, 2.5 weeks? And you do have to sit there and question, you know, if you don't want to go to the theaters, there's almost anything you can wait 2.5 weeks to go see, unless it's heavily spoilery. But that's going to be, that's one or two movies a year, people. And even then you maybe avoid exposure online, just limit your social media attention, and you might be able to get around that. So what are the long-term effects of this? I don't know. I mean, this is going to be really interesting because I think this is going to have a permanent effect on movie going in the future. The option to drop things VOD or PVOD, which stands for premium VOD, or even onto a service like Netflix or Disney Plus, that's going to be up there because they can keep their subscription base and you can get people to watch it. So I think that makes a viable option for a movie that's marginally priced. And so we're going to get a lot more of those. I think you're going to start seeing stuff in the $50 million range. Now the $200 million blockbusters need to do better. So who knows? That might push those productions out farther. We may see more smaller, moderate productions over the next year or two, while the big blockbusters need to have a worldwide theatrical haul. And that's not a terrible thing. I mean, just throwing more money at a movie doesn't make it good. So maybe we're going to get some better scripts for some middling movies. So that might be good. Who knows? We'll see. There's going to be a lot of changes over the next couple of years. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is the Bill and Ted Face of Music trailer. This is going to be available in theaters and premium VOD on September 1st.
Bill, Ted, enough of the delusions. You didn't time travel. And you didn't go to heaven and hell. Here's a real idea for you. Be role models to your daughters. Get real jobs.
A song created by Preston Logan, performed tonight, will save reality as we know it.
Oh. Dude, our dads are totally in trouble.
And you should help them out.
I gotta say, the first trailer did not look good to me. This one looks funny. This one looks like it's the essence of Bill and Ted back. I'm looking forward to it. I need to now go watch Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey before this comes out in the next month. So I'm now looking forward to it. This is the one that's my pie in the sky movie at this point. That trailer came out right before the virtual Comic-Con. This one dropped at Comic-Con and it's for The New Mutants, which opens in theaters on August 28th.
New mutants. They're dangerous.
We know. This place takes your greatest fear and makes you live through it.
Ooh, scary.
What are you doing?
Gotta get better someday.
This one actually looks interesting. I've been kind of wanting to see it. It's been sitting around trying to come out for about 2 years. And they had to delay it due to coronavirus. But the problem is there are contracts in place that say it has to be a theatrical release. Like actually has to be in theaters, which is why Disney can't just drop it onto Disney Plus. But I think they're going to. I think it's going to be released on the 28th, whether it does well or not. It'll hit on the Disney service very quickly because they've already got two of the last X-Men movies on there. They're going to start pushing the X-Men stories on the Disney Plus service as they consolidate all those rights. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Secret, Dare to Dream, and Summerland.
Thank you.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews for this week, and this is a new one. The Secret, Dare to Dream. Katie Holmes plays a widow with three kids who encounters a mysterious man traveling to town to help her out.
Not many men would be willing to take on somebody with your baggage. I mean, three kids, a mountain of debt.
Looking for Miranda Wells?
She's at work right now. You can leave it with me. I'm her son.
You come out here looking for her, and she runs into you? It's pretty weird.
Is it? Your thoughts attract things with a force that you cannot see, but is definitely real.
Okay, this is me thinking about pizza.
You know, it's funny. I remember seeing this trailer a while back. I was actually thinking of putting it in the trailer park. I apparently never did. So I never really covered it as a movie. It was supposed to come out in April, like so many other movies we have. It was supposed to come out in April or May, and then it got delayed because of the coronavirus, and they're finally now going to video on demand. I think this might also be available in limited theaters if you can find them. Depends on the release schedule. Always check your local listings, because who knows what's going on at this point. But the interesting thing I found about this is it's based on a self-help book. I mean, this isn't like Plumbing for Dummies or something like that. It's so as I understand it, because I've never read this book, but The Secret was this book that sort of like a modern age Christian based power of positive thinking book, where it's saying you make the world what you want it to be. If you put out that good energy and you picture yourself having good things happen, good things can happen. Like I said, I don't know how detailed the book is. I don't know if it's corny. I don't know if it's hogwash. I've never read it, so I don't know. But it feels very much like a power of positive thinking type thing, which was very popular in the 70s. You know, and I'm all for that. I am definitely one of those people that say, look, try and be optimistic on certain things. Certain things, you do get anguish and pain, and the world isn't always looking out for you. But you do have to try and make the lemonade out of the lemons instead of just, you know, squeezing lemons into your eyes. And that's kind of what the message is here. And instead of it being a movie about that, it's a movie that takes those principles and applies it. Now, of course, it's contrived. It's this woman who's, you know, her husband died, I think, in a plane crash. And so, yes, she has these three kids, and she's constantly in debt, and she's running out of money, and she's fighting with her kids, and she's an old shrimp boat captain. She's got to keep them separated. But she is in New Orleans. She fishes, I guess. I think that's her job. And she's dating this guy, played by Jerry O'Connell, who runs a restaurant, and he's kind of her boss. I guess he's her fisher person. And Josh Lucas shows up as this mysterious person, but just trying to help her out. And there's a hurricane and it breaks a roof, but Josh Lucas's character helps her fix it. And he comes to her with that message of put positivity out in the world and you can attract positivity. If you're nasty and angry and you feel like the world's against you, you're going to just find all the bad stuff and you're going to overlook all the good stuff, which I have to say it's a good message. I know several people in my life who they only focus on the bad stuff and it's exhausting to deal with them sometimes. So it's heart's in the right place. And it does have, like I said, I believe there's a sort of a Christian based message in the book. So that permeates this, but it's not like a faith based movie because it doesn't have that overwhelming faith based message. It actually sort of exists outside of modern religion, even though you can kind of tell it feels like it's framed in that. And in that sense, it's better than some of these faith-based movies, which, as you know, anyone who's listened to me knows I am very critical of faith-based movies, not because of the message, but sometimes they're just super corny. And they're sometimes just so poorly put together and so poorly acted and so poorly written. I mean, this one's not a great feat of writing, but it's fine. I mean, it feels like a Hallmark movie, where it pushes buttons and it's a little bit manipulative and it certainly gets very corny at the end. And sometimes things work out a little bit too perfectly that are very predictable. But you know, it's kind of, its heart's in the right place, and it also tries and it puts together a coherent film. It's the kind of movie my wife would probably swerve into on TV, and she'd watch the whole doggone thing, and she'd watch the whole series if there were a bunch of them. I've heard some people compare it to a Nicholas Sparks movie. No, because Nicholas Sparks movies are hot garbage. Those things are terrible. And Nicholas Sparks movies are at times misery porn. This one's just a sweet little film, and I found that even though it ran a little long and it wasn't something I wanted to watch the night I watched it, I'm still going to give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Summerland. Gemma Arterton stars as a reclusive writer in Kent, England during World War II, who is put in charge of a child from London who eventually warms her heart.
Frank, this is Miss Lamb, your new guardian.
I don't want him.
We've all got to do our bit.
I'm supposed to go to school.
Go on, then.
Where is it?
This is Frank. He's an evacuee from London.
Do you believe in heaven?
Yes.
Well, you shouldn't. What happened to all the people who died before the Christians? Where did their souls go? Summerland.
Where's Summerland?
It's a myth.
Stories have to come from somewhere.
What's funny is this is another one that's similar. I mean, it's not as cheesy and corny as The Secret Dare to Dream, but in the same sense, it kind of has this uplifting message. It's a movie that has its heart in the right place, and gives us a little bit of optimism. At the same time, there's some tragic stuff that happens in it. And part of it, I'm a big fan of Gemma Arterton. I've always liked her ever since I first saw her, which was even before Quantum of Solace. But that's the first big movie I can remember her from. It rests a lot of it on her shoulders. And if you don't know this, this is just some history for you. During World War II, during the London Blitz, you know, of course, the Nazis were bombing London. And to make it safe for the kids, a lot of times they separated from their families for the parents who had to stay there, and they sent them either to relatives in the country, but they also had a national program where they would just send kids to the country because it was safer there, because that's not where they were bombing. That shows up in a lot of movies. You saw that probably the highest profile one is The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the Chronicles of Narnia movie, and that's the backdrop of this. Initially, she wants nothing to do with the kid because she doesn't want to raise a kid. But of course, she gets to know him and they start to bond. And it's kind of this sweet little story. And I kind of fell in love with it because part of it, it's Gemma Arterton. You know, it's kind of easy to fall in love with her. The kid who plays Peter, who is her ward in this case, he's very good, and they have really good chemistry. And the other thing that's neat about it is, like, because he's, of course, going to school at this country school, and they have like the headmaster there, and they're these stuffy types, these old stuffy, old fashioned British small town types. But in a lot of movies, you see them and they just make them jerks. But they're all kind of nice people. Like the headmaster, you know, he's not just this rap him on the knuckles kind of guy. He has a genuine worry for this kid and a genuine desire to do well and help people out. And I kind of like that, because too often in movies, everybody else is a jerk, just to make it harder for the characters to overcome things. But, you know, you're already in a tough situation. It's World War II, and this kid, his father's fighting in World War II, and his mother's back home in London. He's alone there in Kent, and it's a big imposition. There's enough stress for this situation than to just make other people jerks. So I gotta say, it's a charming little British movie. I really enjoyed it. I'm gonna have to say Summerland also kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm gonna be talking about She Dies Tomorrow and Die Hard. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about She Dies Tomorrow. A young woman feels this certainty that she will die tomorrow and soon infects others with this contagious notion.
I am going to die tomorrow.
What is going on?
There is no tomorrow for me.
All right, listen, Amy, I'm really freaking out right now.
I feel like you put this idea of dying in my head.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
I just thought for a second when the lights went out.
kind of movie is frustrating for me. Because it's a movie I had heard about and I'd heard some great buzz about. And I got a press release about it and I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. I want to cover this. This is a significant movie. It's also done by some people that I really admire. Amy Siemens is the writer and director, and she's, most people would recognize her as a actress. She's in things like, probably the highest profile stuff. She was in like Stranger Things, but she was the mother in the Pet Sematary remake. She was also in stuff like Your Next and some other of these sort of modern horror movies. She's in with that crowd that involves, you know, Joe Swanberg, and Shane Carruthers, which is, he's in the news, but I'm not going to talk about that. But she also does stuff behind the cameras. She worked on the movie. Well, I don't know if she worked in the movie because that was Soderbergh who directed that one. But The Girlfriend Experience, when they made this series of that, she, I think she may have either was the showrunner or she directed or created it. And she had, you know, written and directed some episodes. So she does stuff in front of and behind the camera. And that's great. We need more women in Hollywood directing, and we need more women in horror. I love the fact that the horror genre has been one that's been very bold to put women out there as directors, because you get a different feel and flavor of a movie, especially depending on what you're using as your horror element. You will get a different perspective, and that's fantastic. And I support it. And I was like, I want to see this. I hear great stuff, and I've seen the poster look cool. And you know, so I got the screening of it, and I didn't like it that much. I always hate when that happens, when I kind of go out of my way. I'm like, oh, I really want to see this. And then I watch it, and I'm, here's the thing. The movie itself, it feels to a certain degree like a first film. And it is her first, I think it's her first feature film. But she's directed before. She's done television, and it's not the first time she stepped behind the camera. But it does feel like that, because it has, some of these scenes are overly self-indulgent. If you remember, there was a movie, Mr. Bean's Holiday. It was one of the Mr. Bean movies. And he goes to the Cannes Film Festival and he watches part of this movie that Willem Dafoe's in. And I can't remember whether it was Willem Dafoe or Willem Dafoe was playing a character in this. But it was an art movie that was clear it was all about his ego. And it was just all these shots of him and these slow motion things. And that's kind of what I felt with this movie is, there's about 20 minutes of story here, and the rest of it is just kind of languishing and loving the beauty of the cinema and the sound. And it feels at times almost like an art film with this murky soundtrack and these shapes and colors and the person. It's like they're all on psychedelics, just kind of moving through the movie in slow motion. There's another great thing that reminded me of, if you ever watched the series, Gareth Marenghi's Dark Place, which is this weird little British sci-fi horror series. It's about them making a TV show, and they talk about how they made some of the scenes in slow motion just to pad out the running time. And I felt that that's what happened here, is they're like, oh, we did a first cut. It was 65 minutes long. We need to add 15 minutes. But the idea is great. It's a fantastic idea, this sort of this contagious fear that goes from person to person. And I love that. But the execution just didn't grab me. And that's weird, because everyone else seems to think this is a masterpiece. And I'm breaking with tradition here and saying, I didn't get it. Part of it is these, you know, when somebody gets infected with this idea, they just sort of turn into that, I'm standing in a field, taking psychedelics, waving my arms. And I would think that people would be more interesting if they thought they only had 24 hours to live. I mean, you know, one of the things I've always said with movies is, if I can have a beer with these people, I will like watching them as characters. But I felt bored with the characters. I had no interest whatsoever happened, and particularly the Patient Zero character. This was really not the Patient Zero, but the main character, and she dies tomorrow. I was so bored with her. I was like, my God, I hope that I am more interesting in my last day on this earth than they are. And it has a good cast. There's a lot of good people in there, and I just couldn't get, it just bored me. And I felt bad because I worked so hard to get the screener of it, but still, everyone else is loving it, but I have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Die Hard. Not Die Hard, Die Hard. Tired of being a sidekick, Kevin Hart joins an action hero school run by a potentially disturbed maniac.
Welcome to Ron Wilcox Action Star School. I'm Ron Wilcox.
Rule number one, you are forbidden from visiting the outside world.
You'll stay here.
Rule number two, when you're under this roof, your name is no longer Kevin. Have you ever heard an action star leading man ever called Kevin?
I mean, Kevin James and Mark.
No. Kevin is the name of a punk.
Coach Ron is crazy. I'm serious. He's nuts.
I want you to storm the house, find the victim, and bring him to safety.
This movie is on Quibi, and I've talked a little bit about Quibi. I think Quibi's interesting because it showed up in the news this week because of all the Emmy nominations. Quibi ended up getting something like 11 nominations. Now, what's funny about it is it's almost like these Emmy nominations were written for Quibi itself, because the Emmy nominations were something like for short form programming, which is literally what it does. And like the other types of things that you saw showing up in the Emmys are like webisodes. It's basically how you can get nominated for, like, I think there was a Better Call Saul webisode also nominated, but it's like all strictly to this one category of nominations. Quibi has some interesting stuff there. The problem is, as I'm going through it, I'm realizing that there's no depth to any of the stuff in Quibi. Since it is all short form programming, I may try a couple more series, but this is the second one I've gone through and I'm working on another one. And it's just, it's all surface gags and jokes. So the idea is interesting and it's kind of funny. I mean, I like that Kevin Hart is doing something self-deprecating. John Travolta plays the crazy action star coach. And I like crazy John Travolta. I actually think he's become a more interesting character. He's maybe not as interesting of a turn he did when he did Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction back in 1994. But I think we're talking about an equally interesting time in Travolta's career. I mean, if you watch the movie The Fanatic last year, which was an okay movie, but he was really good in it as this disturbed fan. And this one, he's kind of really playing against the type that he's known for. But I like where Travolta's going with stuff. And I think Kevin Hart's funny in it. I mean, it's certainly wrapped around him. Plus, it has that adorable Lily girl from the AT&T ads. She plays a minor role, and I have a real thing for her. The movie has some good gags. It has some funny parts to it, but like I said, there's no depth. It's just gag to gag to gag. And I think it's 10 episodes. It finally completed dropping on Quibi because they were doing them one a day. It finally completed dropping on Quibi sometime this week. So you can go watch it for the 10 episodes. I think there's a week or 2 week free trial of Quibi, and then it's just $5 a month. That's kind of one of the things I'm doing. I'm just sort of testing out some different streaming services at $5 a month here or there, because you can cancel if you get tired. I who knows if I'll continue. I might go through their Emmy nominated stuff, but while Die Hard isn't fantastic, it's something you can watch when you poop. I think if they ever put that into a DVD, that's going to show up on the cover box. That is the essence of Quibi. So in that sense, I'm going to say Die Hard kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Fat Guy 5 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring 13 Ghosts.
Shake that.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the Fat Guy 5. And this is here strictly for my own personal benefit and to honor my father, who I had pointed out in the first segment. I had talked about him passing away last week. And one of the things I want to do, because my father was always a very private person. He was one of those people, he hated, you know, social gatherings, and he was always very restricted in who he dealt with because he was an introvert at heart. I mean, an extreme introvert. But boy, you get past that. And like a lot of introverts, you know, you could talk for hours and he was very warm and inviting and he was a very emotional guy. And one of the things that I have always been able to frame people with is movies. What are your favorite movies? And I talk to people and when they tell me what their favorite movies is, I that gives me insight. That gives me insight to their personality. That gives me insight to their soul. And I wanted to talk about my father's favorite movie. So this is the Fat Guy Five about my father's, and they're maybe not a definitive list because I never got him to write these down, but these are the movies that I know made an impact on him. So the first one is in fact his favorite movie of all time.
Here's what started the whole thing.
We thought it might be the upper part of some buried structure, so we excavated out on all sides.
And what's more, it seems to have been deliberately buried.
A shrieking monolith, deliberately buried by an alien intelligence, starts man on a mission half a billion miles into space.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What are you talking about, Hal?
2001, A Space Odyssey is a fascinating film, and he was always a big fan of science fiction, and he loved reading Arthur C. Clarke. And it was funny, he wasn't a big fan of some science fiction movies. He didn't care anything about Star Wars or Star Trek. He liked stuff like 2001, A Space Odyssey, what Kubrick did and made that so cerebral and so challenged the idea of what aliens could be. These were not just little green men. This was something truly alien, truly different, something that we really could not relate to. And that's, I think, one of the things that drew him to 2001, the wonder and the scope and the idea that it wasn't tied down with earthly thinking, so to speak. Now, the next one I don't have a trailer for. And the movie is called Tom Brown School Days. Now, I never knew he was a fan of this until like about the year before he had his stroke. He started asking me, have you ever heard of this movie? I've never heard of it. And they've done this film. It's based on a book from the 1800s. And it's been made into like four or five different movies. But he liked the one from 1940. And the story's about this kid who goes to a boarding school. And he runs into bullying, and it's how the kid deals with bullying and how he makes his friends. The older you were, the more power you had at the school. And so they would have these fourth and fifth and sixth year students could really kind of, well, it's really hazing is what it was. And the story is about this kid being bullied by this older kid and how they kind of all fight back. And it's all within the internal politics of the school. And I think this shows a lot. The fact that my dad did not like bullies. And he had trouble dealing with some of them when he was in school. I know I had my bullies growing up, and he struggled with how to help me take care of them because there was usually no easy answer. So Tom Brown School Days, the 1940 version, it's old. It's a bit antiquated, but it's a neat little movie and it's worth seeing. The next one is another insight into my dad's personality. Another one of his favorite, and this isn't actually an actual film, but it's a series of films.
Hello.
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 Pick out two fingers.
One, two. Pick out two fingers.
Knucklehead, turn. No!
Say, miss, would you like to get married?
What?
Oh, it's not me. It's him.
Boy, if I hadn't ducked, we'd have collided sure. What a narrow escape.
Here we go. I hope this works.
You're playing my song. That's funny.
The Three Stooges had a huge impact on him and his comedy. And just as much, and probably more, he liked Laurel and Hardy as well. And I remember as a kid going up to the house where he grew up and watching the old Laurel and Hardy shorts on Saturday mornings, on the Cleveland stations. And they'd always thrown the Three Stooges. He loved that kind of stuff. And I even remember in the '90s, I got the VHS of all the different Three Stooges. And I think there was a local network that was showing a lot of the Three Stooges episodes. And we'd always watch those together, late at night in the '90s. And even in his later days, I'd bring him over to my place when I would take care of him and we'd watch some old Three Stooges stuff. So yeah, that shows his comedy. He loved that slapstick comedy. Now the next movie is a movie I never expected him to ever get into.
We need to find someone who can survive here. Do you understand?
Yeah, of course.
Who's Miranda?
Oh, my God. I will pretend you did not just ask me that.
Hmm? All right, everyone. Gird your loins.
I don't understand why it's so difficult to confirm an appointment.
I know. I'm so sorry, Miranda. I actually did confirm last
night. Details of your incompetence do not interest me.
Who is that? You're right. I don't fit in here. I am not skinny or glamorous, but I'm smart. I learn fast and I will work.
Who is that sad little person?
Like I said, he does not suffer bullies well, and The Devil Wears Prada is a movie about a bully and a woman overcoming that. And when he saw The Devil Wears Prada, he went and saw it like 5 times in the theaters, which I never expected my father to do, but he went and saw it all the time, told it would take people. He's like, let's go see this movie. It's a great movie. It became a movie that he started to get really interested in Emily Blunt as an actress and Anne Hathaway because he liked them so much in the film. And I think it's so funny that it was the last movie I would have expected of him. But when you understand, you know, like you said, he didn't like bullies. I don't like bullies either. And I got that from him. And you can see that's why this movie had such an impact. Now, the last one is another one that surprised so many people. And this was his favorite movie of last year.
How long has it been since your last confession?
Oh, it's been about 2 years. I do drugs, sell drugs, murder people.
I've lost my best friend. My beautiful girl with a dark past.
Last night was amazing.
What are you talking about?
The time you turned into a dinosaur and ate someone.
What?
That's right, Velocipaster. I had him over. I'd bring him over sometimes and take care of him. And I'd have him at my place so I could do some work. And I'm like, well, I have to watch his screener. He's like, okay, I'll watch it with you. And he saw some good screeners and bad screeners with me, but it was Velocipaster. And he got a kick out of it. And then a couple weeks later, he was over and I said, well, I have to do some busy work. Do you want to watch something? Do you want to watch an episode of this or that? He goes, let's watch Velocipaster again. So I watched Velocipaster and then I got him the video for Christmas and he showed it to everybody. I mean, he probably showed it to as many people as he took to go see The Devil Wears Prada. So there you go. That's a snapshot. If you want to know kind of what raised me, what gave me my taste in movies, that's the driving force. You will be missed. Rest in peace, Dad. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week, I want to talk about 13 Ghosts. This is another release from Shout Factory on their Scream Factory title. Tony Shalhoub and Shannon Elizabeth stars a family who inherit their strange uncle's house, only to discover it's haunted by vengeful spirits.
Father, I've instructed my lawyer to deliver my last will and testament.
A key?
A key to what?
A key to your new house. This house is the fruit of my life's work.
Arthur, we've got some papers to sign in the library. After that, I would love to take you and the family around a tour of the house.
Well, your uncle was quite a collector of many things.
What's that?
This house is not a house. We're in the middle of a machine.
Now, 13 Ghosts was one of the first movies made by Dark Castle, and they had 13 Ghosts and they had House on Haunted Hill, two movies that were remade from William Castle's canon. Those are gimmicky movies that came out in the 50s and 60s. I think that 13 Ghosts and House on Haunted Hill is a great double feature, whether you're looking at the William Castle versions or whether you're watching the remakes of them. And Shout Factory also did a release, I think a year or two ago, of House on Haunted Hill. So it makes a great double feature. This one's kind of intimate because it's all, for the most part, taking place in this haunted house. And the ghosts are, it's very graphic. It is a very graphic movie. So it's not the family friendly fun that the original 13 Ghosts had. And like anything that Shout Factory does, they have some great special features. They've got an interview with Shannon Elizabeth. They got some interviews with some of the ghosts. They're all gruesome, horrible, disfigured and violently death ghosts. And so they have some interviews with some of the actors who played those characters and they have some behind the scenes stuff. It's not loaded, but it has some nice stuff in there that goes above and beyond what was originally on the DVD released 20 years ago or almost 20 years ago. 13 Ghosts is a lot of fun. Like I said, my suggestion is to get it with House on Haunted Hill, the remake. I'm going to have to say that this Blu-ray release kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Secret Garden, Made in Italy, and Sam Sam. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.